Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for May 3rd, 2015. I'm your host, Dave McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Tim Shiflett.
Well, good evening, sir.
Yes, big show tonight. You and I are going to be talking some different Southern political topics until a little later on, in which Drew Pitt of Arkansas will join us. Chance Catherine may, she's in transit, and she may join us later on the show. If anybody's, you know, tuned in and they're wondering, where's Catherine? That's the situation. Keep you updated. But, you know, with two, three of us throughout the show, we're in good hands. But let's go ahead and start off right off with some polls that came out during the week in a state that really doesn't get a lot of polling but should because it has an odd year election is Mississippi. And Mason Dixon did a poll of the Mississippi governor's race. They looked at Phil Bryant, who's the incumbent, and they put him against two different challengers, both females with the same initials for whatever reason, Tim. Vicki Slater, who's an attorney in Mississippi, and apparently is not an announced candidate, and Valerie Short, who has a military background, who is an announced candidate. Neither candidate is doing very well against incumbent Phil Bryant. He has a 31-point lead on Vicki Slater, a 35-point lead, I guess it is, on Valerie Short.
Right.
Just let's be honest, yeah, pretty dreadful. You saw the numbers. What do you think?
Well, I don't see anything to write home about. I think Slater's going to probably run, and she's probably going to be the nominee. But, I mean, when you're losing women by over 20 points and you're a Democrat and you're a woman, that probably is not going to look too good on election day. Neither is the fact that white voters, she's getting 12%. Get this. He's getting a larger percent of African-American voters than she is white voters. Now, that's how dreadful it is. He is beating her by over 40 points with independent voters. I mean, there's and it's even worse, you know, when he's paired up with Short. I mean, it's just also, something they didn't mention in this poll, I don't think, is that Governor Bryant has a very, very high approval rating.
Yeah, 72%. 72
yeah,
over
so,
20, which that probably does figure in some. For whatever reason, they like Phil Bryant, unlike, say, Rick Scott or Sam Brownback in Kansas. I mean, there are Republican governors that are unpopular and still eke it out due to the fact that their party in the region, but Phil Bryant is better liked in his state.
And you know, let's face it, Democrats have not exactly been doing that well there lately. That's why I was stunned when I've seen some of the polling where you match up Hillary Clinton with Jeb Bush, and they've got Mississippi as a toss-up state. No, that's not possible. I mean, it's just not possible. Either that or Jeb Bush is getting his, you know, that's not possible. When you look at something like this, it's just, I don't see it.
Well, we're going to look at a North Carolina poll in a little bit, and I'll ask the question about Hillary Clinton because we actually have the Hillary Clinton numbers to go against the state numbers, so we'll get to that. But, you know, it's just – there's just no way to look around it. You know, obviously, The Republicans have a major problem with minority voters across the country. Black voters, Latino voters, Native American voters, they're even beginning to have problems with Asian voters. But you just can't get around the fact that Democrats, particularly in the South, but really any rural area across the country, have a problem with white voters. And
if you
just don't look at the problem, then you're not going to fix it. And there's going to be races that demographic change is just not going to pull you out of. The U.S. House is one of those places where it's going to be a long time before demographic shifts can flip the House. You're going to have to go and change people's minds and change people's votes. And a race like this is pretty stark, where you see, Phil Bryant is doing better among African-American voters in the state than either Democratic candidate would do with white voters. I mean, that's Valerie Short, 7% of the white vote. O'Hara gets 4% of the white vote. This is Sean O'Hara. If you've listened to our show, we've talked about him before. He runs for every office. He's a gadfly candidate. If margin of error was 3%, it is mathematically possible that Sean O'Hara is doing better among white voters than the Democratic nominee in Mississippi. There is no way to spin this as a positive or a good thing or not a problem. Tim, you see what I'm saying mathematically about Sean O'Hara and Valerie Short here?
Yeah, but I do want to say one thing about this particular race first. Even in conservative Mississippi, this race may be a little bit of an anomaly. This may be really based on the personality of the people in question. The governor actually has a positive approval rating among Democrats in this state. Only 3% of Republicans disapprove of him. Two-thirds of independents approve of him. This guy is very, very, very popular. In an open race, though, you're right, Democrats would struggle to get 20% of the white vote on the best day. Well, I mean, look, you know, it's happening all over the South in particular. You talked about these rural areas. I got to hand it to the Republicans. They have done their homework well. They have drawn the congressional districts in places where they control the process to the point that it would be nearly impossible to beat them there unless you just somehow went in there and changed the voters' minds, because there's not natural Democratic constituencies in a lot of those places. They're lumped into the major cities, right?
Yes. I mean, there's a difference in, voters in the South or in western states or wherever that are metropolitan areas, particularly in city centers. But when you get outside, it becomes a bigger issue. Like I was reading a book, and they said that James Carville once called Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh with Alabama stuck in the middle. I drove through Ohio recently. When you leave Cincinnati, but until you get to Columbus, there's a lot of rural land. I literally saw a barn, and I think the last time I drove through Ohio, I saw this barn I mentioned on the show. It is a good 50 minutes north of Cincinnati, so it is clearly in the old Union, if you will, yet way above the Mason-Dixon line, yet they have a Confederate flag painted on the roof of this Ohio farm. And you can tell that there's a lot of rural voters that are just think differently than their city counterparts, wherever it may be.
Well, look here.
A strange sight.
Look here where we are. You've heard for years, well, Georgia is at Atlanta, a couple of other pockets. and then the rest of the state. Well, that's really true. I mean, you get up in here, and it's just, it's tough sledding for Democrats at the statewide level. I mean, they just get wiped out. Then you get south of Atlanta, and the further south of Atlanta you get, you run into that again. You get in Atlanta and DeKalb County and those counties, and, you know, 65-70% of the vote's Democratic, but it cannot overcome all of the rest of the state. And when you've got, you know, big counties like Catoosa up here above us, in 2006, our candidate for governor got 18% of the vote there, and that's a county of over 70,000 people. Now, think about that for a minute. That adds up, man. And you know it's going on like that all over the state of Mississippi, except for probably right there in Jackson, right?
Yeah, and maybe a little bit of Starkville, a little bit of Oxford, you know, where you have some college population centers, because Athens is a little different than here in Georgia. And,
well, David,
maybe the case.
Let me ask you something, just political reality here. People keep telling me, oh, we've got to go get their votes. We've got to. What do we say to them that we haven't already said?
I don't know if there's anything new you can say, but you just have to emphasize and stay on issues in which you can change people's minds. You can't get onto these hot button issues and talk about it. And
that's where
there's a lot of people on the far left that like to talk about hot button issues, just like there's a lot of people on the far right that like to talk about hot button issues. But you got to talk about those things everybody can find common ground. That's like, for instance, the president's health care bill. If you want to talk about not kicking people off for pre-existing conditions, you can get a whole lot of people on board when you talk about that. You talk about some other things, maybe not as much. So you got to find that common ground, and you got to try to, you know, really stay on it and stay message-centric. And you know, when people get off on those things, you know, those social issues and things like that, say, how many people are truly affected by those things? Whether you're probably not going to agree with us, but in reality, is that where your life is lived on some of these things? And it's just something we got to try to drill down and focus on. But in the same time in which I saw that Mississippi poll, there was two polls out of North Carolina, Elon University and Survey USA. Elon University polled their statewide races, whereas Survey USA just looked at the presidential race. But I do like the fact that the Survey USA Today poll confirmed the Elon numbers. But let's get into this. In the Elon poll, in the governor's race, I believe they forgot a decimal point because I don't think Roy Cooper's really at 435% because he would win if that's the case. But I think he's at 43.5 to incumbent Pat McCrory's 45. Within the margin of error, incumbent Republican Pat McCrory has the lead. If you look in the U.S. Senate poll, Richard Burr, incumbent, 44. Kay Hagan, former incumbent, 43. That thing's tight as can be, but Richard Burr has the slight lead. Then you go to president. They just report on the top line there, Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush. Hillary Clinton is winning 47 to 44, has the top number. Now, obviously, we know North Carolina is much more moderate than Mississippi, but they like their statewide Republicans better than they like their national Republican, or vice versa. They like their national Democrat better than they like their local Democrats, or some combination thereof. So this is a strike. Remember how many years we've had people running away from the national party? Now, the national Democrat in the South is more unpopular than the local ones, and the same case in Mississippi. Tim, what's going on?
Well, you know, I'm looking at job approval ratings in this poll. That's the first thing they showed. You saw it. And there we have the president in North Carolina with a higher approval rating than Pat McCrory. That should tell you something right there. the President of the United States is more popular than any statewide guy that's got to run next year in North Carolina. That is why Hillary Clinton is doing so well there. And at the same time, the Republican incumbents are holding their own or are a couple of points ahead in their particular races. But I am encouraged by that. What it does tell me is this, David, and, you know, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. Yes, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I've already decided that, even though I love, you know, Bernie Sanders and some other people. If she is at the top of the ticket, she is really, really, really going to help statewide candidates in places not like North Carolina. Not only does she put that state heavily into play in the presidential race, but all the down ballot races are going to be right in play, too. We got a chance to do really well in that state next year, and that state is light years ahead of a state like Mississippi. There is a case to be made now that Virginia and North Carolina are the two progressive states, or at least the two most progressive states in the South.
Yeah, and I think in some ways more so than Florida. Florida may end up being
more
reliably Democratic over the lifetime. But I think as far as if you look at the whole electorate across different races and different geographic and groups and whatnot, Virginia and North Carolina has a more overall evenly distributed profile as opposed to Florida, which is going to be certain pockets of voters.
Right.
South End is going to be more likely to vote Democratic. But then, you know, obviously Florida is going to stay a swing state. Georgia is going to be a step behind. And then after Georgia, pick 'em, because I think it's another drop-off before you get to South Carolina or Texas or you know, Tennessee, or wherever it may be.
Okay, well, David, the governor there in North Carolina has a 38% approval rating and a just minuscule approval rating among Democrats. I told you what the governor of Mississippi had in North Carolina, like barely 20% of Democrats even approve of his job. Only 38% of independents do, and get this, less than 60% of Republicans do. Where McCrory is holding his head above water is with men as opposed to women, where his approval rating's 10 points higher. We can win that race right there. With those kind of numbers, you've worked in campaigns. If you see those numbers with your candidate being an incumbent, would you be worried?
Oh, definitely so. I think if you look at all three races, you know, the incumbent, two Republican incumbents are just ahead by a few points, but they're short of 50. And then, of course, you know, the top of the ticket, if Hillary Clinton lifts them, they've got all the different things going for them. And North Carolina has gone Democratic in different types of races in the recent past. And so it's all working there to where that state can kind of flip over with a Senate seat, a governorship, and, of course, the presidential race, which is kind of a gravy state when it comes right down to it. Democrats don't really have to have North Carolina, but it can show the long-term turn, if you will. Well, we may get back to some of this polling after a while, but I think our guest just called in. Welcome back to the Cubs Who Vine from Arkansas, Mr. Drew Pritt.
Well, thank you very much, David. It's glad to be back with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Good to have you on. And we were talking about presidential politics, and Arkansas, in many ways, is maybe not the leading state, but certainly one of the top two or three as far as presidential politics and where the candidates have roots at, because you got a leading contender in both parties. Let's start on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton's obviously doing great across the nation. How is her campaign being perceived inside the state of Arkansas?
I mean, I like the way that they are taking the approach this time. You know, when she ran in 2008, it was very much top down. This time, they're going from the ground up. They're going back to the old Arkansas Travelers. I've heard that Sheila Brofman and some of the Arkansas Travelers who helped Bill Clinton in both of his races are heavily involved. They do have a state director down here. They are definitely organizing. You know, I do want to give a shout out though and let you know that it's not just a given here, because Bernie Sanders actually has largely right now some of the team is who you found in the way more progressive the Occupy Little Rock and other progressive groups, but Bernie Sanders people are definitely going to try to make a play for the state, so that's going to at least give us a nice little primary down here in Arkansas. But so far, I would say, by and large, Hillary's got the state in a majority at the point right now. And it's based more I think it's based on two things. It's based on sentiment. Most of us all know the Clintons more than just having met them once. We know them, you know, personally as people. The second thing is that, you know, you definitely have a lot of people lining up that are players in the state here for Hillary.
Yeah, I just couldn't imagine Bernie Sanders doing really, he's probably not going to do that well in many states. I just really can't imagine him doing well in Arkansas, where she was first lady, where Bill Clinton meant so much to that party. It would be almost a slap in their face and
I just think it's more a question of delegates at this point, you know, that how many delegates can they shave off, you know, in Arkansas. That's their effort, in my opinion, at the moment.
Well, I'll go ahead and see if Tim wants to ask you questions, and then Hillary Clinton, and then we'll move on to other things. Tim?
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Pritt. Thank you for being with us tonight. I got to ask this. You know, Hillary Clinton was born in Illinois. She's a senator from New York. Is she actually thought of by the average person as an Arkansas person, or is that all about her husband?
I would have to say that from what I have seen, and it depends who you ask. By and large, Arkansans see her as part of being from Arkansas, even though she was born in Chicago, even though she's a senator from New York. She's lived here long enough. She was first lady here. She was an attorney here. They have come back to the state enough that there is that sense that I think if you go back to the 1960s, would one have said that Bobby Kennedy was from New York, or was he from Massachusetts? He was, you know, of the Kennedy family in Massachusetts. Ergo, because of Bill, but also because of a lot of the effort that Hillary herself has done within the state, allows her to at least say that you know, this is a home for her down here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's the best way of looking at it.
Would it be a home enough for, let's say she is the nominee?
Right.
Would she have a big enough presence in that state, her and her husband, to put that state into play in the general election?
I think they would, and I'll tell you why. You go back to 2004, there was polling that showed if John Kerry had picked General Wesley Clark to be his running mate instead of John Edwards, that Kerry could have carried Arkansas. You know, you're going to have Clark, you're going to have Beebe, you're going to have all the popular Democrats out here pushing for Hillary big time. The second thing that you have to take into consideration is that by her merely having this presence, and because Bill will be back here, and because of what we have seen economically by having the presidential library, the Clinton Presidential Library here, it will put this state into play. You're going to have a large turnout in the African-American community. And as a sidebar, she's not officially announced, but there's very strong indications that the former president of the Little Rock School Board, the elected school board before they took over the school board, Diane Curry, is going to be running for U.S. Congress in the 2nd District. If she does that, that's going to even increase the African-American turnout. But you also have to take in the fact that the Democratic women are hugely turned on and turned up to make sure that the votes get out for Hillary. And so those are going to be some efforts that are going to make Arkansas definitely, would I say that it's a blue state? No, but I would say it would make this a purple state, and it would definitely be one where they would be spending money on ads and a good ground game, and I think it would be a competitive state. And the other thing is that it would leak over. You have to think in Texarkana, if they're making a play there, that leaks over into Texas, pushes a vote there. It's going to leak over into Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, Oklahoma, Kentucky, all those states that definitely are going to be in play.
All right. That sounds wonderful. Let me throw it back to David to get us to our next topic. David?
Yes. Next one, Mike Huckabee, former governor of the state, one of the Republican candidates. There's so many candidates on the Republican side that the race is very fluid. But I think everybody kind of agrees Mike Huckabee is that leader among the religious conservatives. I mean, that's kind of his niche, and that's a pretty big niche, particularly in Iowa, where he could catch fire, and so therefore he's important. He's made a lot of statements recently, which have kind of caught folks' attention, and we'll get to those. But he released a video late last week, a little campaign video, and he doesn't even mention President Obama, but he kind of goes after President Clinton in that video. Do you think that he's going to try to run squarely in the primary against the Clintons and kind of ignore President Obama?
I think he will, but this is one thing that I would definitely encourage you all to think about, is that don't necessarily assume that Arkansas is going to go for Huckabee because he was governor here. There is, and there's two things, more of a just a minor thing and more of a major thing. The major thing is that when Mike Huckabee finished up being governor of Arkansas, he moved off to Florida. And that has left a large sense of, I wouldn't say distrust, but definitely an angst within the base that is here for the Republican Party here in Arkansas. And, of course, now they control everything. You know, but it was very interesting that when he was picking his inner circle, who's going to be his staff, he's coming back to Hope to announce on May 5th. But, you know, for instance, Jeb Bush has picked up one or two people, one who's very prominent that was actually in Huckabee's administration that we can't announce name yet, but who is going to be actually with Jeb this time. Lindsey Graham, of all people, has some promoters in the state. Ben Carson has a group, and so does Ted Cruz. You know, it's you know, it's interesting that the lieutenant governor we have, Tim Griffin, former congressman, is going to work as a senior political advisor on the campaign. I think it says that you have a lot of trouble in your home state or perceived home state where you were governor for 10 years. That you have to get the current lieutenant governor to actually go up and shore up fences for you. One of the other things is that video has gotten a lot of scorn just on the Republican side. One of the things Huckabee likes to point out is that, you know, he had a balanced budget every 10 years as governor of Arkansas. Well, it was very quick to be pointed out by some of the in-state people who are for Rand Paul that it's a constitutional obligation in the state of Arkansas to have a balanced budget, so it doesn't matter.
In most states, it is.
Right.
You can't print money, and I think everybody knows it just sounds good. But so really he is thinking about, or he's planning to announce his campaign in Hope, Arkansas.
Which is where he's from.
No, that's where he's from too. Okay. I'll say this. I don't think he'll want to make Florida his base because, you know, there's enough Rubio Bush split there to divide that up anymore. Now, watching that video, another interesting thing was I noticed he kind of talked about how when they, when they went about their budget, they didn't hurt people. They didn't cut education and throw folks off of services. And it was kind of like he was running against Scott Walker and others. Did you get that sense that he was trying to be a little more compassionate, try to draw a wedge between Walker maybe more so than anybody else?
Well, I think I got that edge, but I think the other edge is that you have to know Arkansas political history. And going back to when Huckabee was governor here for 10 years, there was a huge rivalry between Huckabee and the Hutchinson family. And as you know, the Hutchinson family are in power now with Asa being governor here. And then Tim, former U.S. Senator, but then, you know, you have Hutchinson's in the state legislature, both state senate and state house and whatnot. I think that was more of a dig at the Hutchinsons, just a very subtle dig about some of the plans that Asa Hutchinson has pointed out in his legislative package. So that was kind of like, you know, it was like, oh, okay, so you're firing up that rivalry again. So that's kind of interesting to see that there. I don't think it's Scott Walker as much as it's a dig at Asa Hutchinson.
Well, that's pretty petty, and it seems like his campaign people need to control him because he's not running against Asa Hutchinson. Tim, any questions about Mike Huckabee? He's made a lot of comments recently, this video, anything else?
Yeah, I had to ask one here that comes to mind immediately. Drew, you've seen a lot of Governor Huckabee over the years, probably a lot more than you would have liked to have seen if you have my sentiments about him. But
no, I can give amen to that one. On Sunday.
Yeah. the question is, can he be anything more than a niche candidate in the Republican primaries? I don't see a path to victory for him in the primaries based on anything really, including his record as governor. Do you?
When I wrote my article this week for Celine 24/7, I'm actually predicting we're going to see the one path of victory that I see for Mike Huckabee is that I think we're going to go into a brokered convention for the very first time since 1948. There is just, you know, but I want to get a little bit past that. And the problem with Mike Huckabee, the problem with a lot of the Republican candidates, is how do you get to 270 in November? You know,
mm-hmm.
Democrats start with 246 electoral votes. People
mm-hmm.
haven't stopped to think that if Romney had won Ohio, Florida, and Virginia in 2012, he still would have lost the election.
Right.
You know, they need states like Pennsylvania back, New York, New Jersey used to always be a Republican state. It is no longer. Wisconsin, you could say is purple. You know, that's where Scott Walker kind of goes there. You know, it used to be in presidential politics. California was a given. They've lost California. Texas is actually starting to move a little bit purple. It's still red, but it's moving that way. They've lost Michigan. I think that's why Rick Snyder is putting his name out there. You know, but as it facts right there, you know, I don't see how a Mike Huckabee, how a Ted Cruz, how even a Rand Paul can pull a California, New York, a Pennsylvania, and Illinois, and Michigan, and New Jersey. You know, those states right there add up, you know, if you just add those up, you know, right there, you have, you know, was it like I think almost 170 electoral votes right there alone. You
uh-huh.
know, now you just got to get 100 more. You know, for Huckabee, I also have to wonder if maybe the reason why he chose to announce in hope is because Ted Cruz went to Liberty. And yes, Mike Huckabee is from Hope, but Hope is near Texas, near Texarkana. It's also where you have a high concentration of Hispanic Americans within the state. And you just have to wonder if it's a tit for tat. I can tell you, I do know Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee and I have, you know, he went before the Arkansas Ethics Commission, I think it was 14 times. I'm proud to say I was one of the people who brought against him one time with that, you know, for his use of state computers to promote a bond campaign he had. The problem with Mike Huckabee is he does get very petty. And I think that pettiness is going to work against him when it's all said and done in presidential politics. I do not see Mike Huckabee being on the ticket. I could be wrong, but I just don't see it happening.
So if I say a guy like Jeb Bush is a national candidate and can compete in some of those states you mentioned,
right,
there's just no way that Mike Huckabee could do that.
I just don't see it. I mean, you know, Huckabee right now is promoting this tour that he's starting, the God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy tour, you know, to kick off his presidential campaign. I don't see how that goes down in Flatbush, New York. I don't see how that plays in Appleton, Wisconsin. I don't see how that plays in Cleveland. You know, I don't see, and you also have to take into consideration, too, in a lot of those states, there's going to be an aversion to somebody who is overtly religious in their politics. And that's going to hurt against them, especially with the fact that you've got a large Catholic population up there. And, you know, Jeb Bush, who is a Roman Catholic, is going to be able to, you know, when Mike Huckabee went before the Hispanic group the other day and said, I don't speak Spanish, but I speak a better language, I speak Jesus. You know, Jeb Bush, I think, saying something simply like peace be with you or something that's common within the Catholic faith is going to get him that rapport that you're not, you know, that you're not going to be able to get when you're speaking, you know, hell and fire and brimstone like a Southern Baptist preacher does. You know, it might go down well in Texas or Alabama, but it sure is going to be hard to play it out there in California.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. David?
Yes, well, Drew, you brought up a few of the things I wanted to ask about, so I'm going to skip on to the next one. And that would be about 2 to 3 weeks ago, Mike Huckabee said that he felt that a lot of young men should just hold, and women should hold off on joining the armed services until after 2016 because President Obama's president, the commander-in-chief, and they might as well wait. That seems pretty controversial to me because obviously whether you like the president or not, you don't want to hurt the armed forces. And in theory, you could say, well, by not being able to recruit the best and the brightest, that would hurt the armed services. Secondly, the military is not supposed to be political. And there's a lot of young people that their best option out of high school is to go into the armed services, and he could hurt those young people's lives. They may not have some of the same opportunities, and that would just be putting their life on hold. Wasn't that a cheap political stunt, or how's that being perceived in Arkansas?
I agree it is a cheap political stunt. And, you know, especially as we come out of not even discussing ISIS and all that jazz that's going on over there, as we come out of Iraq, as we come out of Afghanistan, you know, it's definitely something that I think that has been taken as a slight. You know, I believe so far I've been trying to do my research, and you know, I thought it was interesting that Time magazine just a few weeks ago pointed out that most likely none of the major candidates for president this time around will have firsthand experience serving in the military and not being a veteran. I think you also have the fact with Hillary, you know, there was a it's not, we'll never know, right? But the word was that in 2008, had she been the nominee, that Wes Clark had a strong chance of being her running mate. She's going to be able to trot out, you know, the former Supreme Allied Commander, a man who went into war, you know, in Bosnia, didn't have a single casualty, but who has a very distinguished military record. And she's going to be able to bring him out to be a surrogate for her on the stump. The Republicans, you know, could have brought out Petraeus. Petraeus, you know, also was real close to Jeb Bush, but now with his conviction, you know, that hurts them right there with him. You know, who else out there has got military service that's a major candidate that's running? There's not. And I think this whole thing about holding off, it just shows once again how Mike Huckabee, I think, is so out of touch. And this, I'm starting to hear this from people that really are not even in politics, but they're making the comment. And by the way, and let me correct myself, I mentioned Lindsey Graham. I'm probably one of the few ones who does. I think he can actually be a credible candidate, especially if McCain's people get behind him. But Lindsey Graham, I know, is a veteran. He's a retired colonel, I believe, in the Air Force or something. You know, so I do want to give him credit at least for that. But you know, I mean, Mike Huckabee never served in the military. He definitely had the option to. Never served. So it's definitely working against him.
Yeah. Next thing, you're mentioning that Mike Huckabee, you don't see him winning, and there, and then really don't see him being picked as VP. I agree. I think he has to definitely win the nomination. He's not really VP material. But another Arkansas politician in the GOP, possibly maybe looked at as GOP material, you sent us an article saying that Tom Cotton may be looked at as a VP nominee if Scott Walker were to, you know, win the nomination. Scott, you know, Tom Cotton's only been in the Senate. He'll been in the Senate for 2 years by the time that election comes up. Was in the House before that, but doesn't have a long resume. Arkansas is not a vital state, and you also may be facing Hillary Clinton, where you'd be having to fight harder for a state with, you know, 6-7 electoral votes. Is it really very likely Tom Cotton would be a VP nominee?
Well, we first have to ask the Koch brothers. I mean, Scott Walker has definitely won the Koch brother primary, and Tom Cotton is definitely in the hip pocket. You know, they used to say years ago that that one of my more favorite Democrats, Scoop Jackson, who was a U.S. senator, Democrat, ran for president himself from Washington, was the senator from Boeing. I think you could say that Tom Cotton is the senator from the Koch brothers. You know, seriously, I don't see him. Even if he is the nominee, I think Hillary would just run circles around him. The one Republican who I really am the most scared of, and the one Republican I think that who has not announced that they're going to run yet, but he's looking at it, but the one Republican that I think that could win this race is John Kasich, the governor out of Ohio. The problem is, you know, Senator Bob Dole said not too long ago on Meet the Press that Ronald Reagan today couldn't make it in the Republican Party, that he would be considered too moderate. I think that says a lot about why Tom Cotton would even be considered vice presidential material. I'll admit, you know, I was a little bit too close to the source. I consider Mark Pryor a close friend, and I was in shock that the state defeated him for Tom Cotton. But I can tell you that I've even heard from many Republicans since Tom Cotton's gotten in there how embarrassed they've been with him when he makes his comments, you know, to Iran and makes his other comments. And, yeah, he better hope Mike Huckabee, or not Mike Huckabee, you know. Forgive me for saying this. He better hope that Mike Beebe doesn't decide to run against him for re-election, because he'll be a one-term wonder at that.
Yeah. Well, let's continue to ask questions. Tim, Arkansas politics, yeah. We can open it up further. What you got?
Yeah, well, I did want to ask a question about Tom Cotton, because this is one of those people that when you're not from the state and you see some of this stuff in the press about him, you kind of scratch your head about the guy and you just wonder what the deal is. So what is the deal with Tom Cotton? Is this just another freshman trying to quickly make a name for himself, or does he believe all this nonsense he's talking?
The sadness is, I think he really believes it. But here's the thing about Tom Cotton and that I need to remind people. Tom Cotton, I put in the same category as a Bill Halter.
Mm-hmm.
They were born in the state. They graduated school in the state. They left. And they didn't come back till they ran for office.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that when we had the Pink Tomato Festival in Warren, where I grew up in Bradley County, you know, it was said for years that if you missed the Pink Tomato Festival, no matter what party you were, you could kiss, you know, South Arkansas's votes away, because it's the oldest festival in the state. Grant you, that was another day and another time, but he kissed it off this past election season, went out to a fundraiser for the Koch brothers, and then narrowly won the county down there. It shocked a lot of us. We didn't see that one coming. I think it was more the wave election than anything that worked to his advantage, and that's why he was able to move that through. But, you know, I've spent very little time around the senator. You know, I mean, I've had people who have asked me, because they know that I'm in the LGBT community, are the rumors true? I can say that I've never seen him at the bar, so I don't know what his business is. But, God, I hope he's not gay, because if so, that would be the first gay person I really would be ashamed of in my life to know, especially with his voting record. But he's the way he speaks, the way he talks, the vitriolic that he espouses. I think George Wallace in his prime could have taken lessons from Tom Cotton. And I'm just not that enamored by him.
Yeah, so you've segued into the next thing that I actually wanted to ask you about. And it's another thing that Arkansas has been heavily in the news about. I know you've been following it closely. You saw the backlash to Governor Pence in Indiana with their religious freedom bill. Now, you have House Bill, I believe it's 1228 in Arkansas, which is their version of the religious freedom bill. It was similar to the one in Indiana, and it was pulled back. And the governor asked him to moderate the bill. The question I have here is, what role did Walmart play in forcing the governor's hand on this?
It's a lot more intricate than just Walmart. Walmart definitely gets some of the credit.
Uh-huh.
I definitely... you know, I was up there every single day. That first of all, you have to know that every single day that bill was sitting there before it went through the legislative or went through the legislature, when it went through on the floor, up to the point when the governor was going to sign and whatnot, there were crowds of Arkansans. And the people who turned out, we had federal judges. Who actually, a federal judge, you know, was in the crowd, you know, trying to be kind of discreet, but was there. And for once, I have to, you know, I give a lot of credit to Kendrick Johnson with HRC, with Chad Griffin, who's the national president, who's from Arkansas, of Human Rights Campaign, down to James Rector, down to so many people, so many volunteers that turned out. But there were crowds like what you saw in Wisconsin with the labor bill. And that's something you never see at the Arkansas legislature when they're in session. And it wasn't just the LGBT community. You had veterans turning out. You had the retired Episcopal bishop. You had the local Jewish rabbi. You had little old ladies with blue hair that you never would think would be on our side that were there. You saw African-American leaders turning out. You saw labor leaders turning out. But the thing that really made it the best part, aside from all that, was Walmart, because Walmart's national got that. But you had Axiom, who is based mm-hmm. here. You had Dillard's, who is here. You had a lot of these people who said, you know, no, this is enough. This is discrimination. You know, we still carry the stain of the 1957 Central High crisis
yes,
with us. And it's still very fresh in everybody's memory mm-hmm. because a lot of the people who were protesting, the older people that were there, they kept harkening back saying, we don't want another Central High. You know, they remembered what happened the first time. And, you know, so you had that as an aspect. But I got to say this also. Asa Hutchinson's first bid for statewide office was 1986 for the U.S. Senate against Dale Bumpers. And he got beat, got like 36% of the vote. Asa Hutchinson, of the Hutchinson clan, is a much more moderate Republican. It's taken him 4 decades to become governor. I think he has the wherewithal, he has the heart, and he has the compassion enough to know, number one, this was bad for the state. Number two, you had the business interests that were pushing, saying this is bad for the state. Number three, you have these huge crowds turning out saying this is bad for the state. And then you had his son, Seth Hutchinson, who is ironically a union organizer in Texas and also an organizer for Bernie Sanders for president. Gotta love God's sense of humor. who signed the petition and contacted his dad and said, Dad, this is bad. This is bad for the state. And you add all that together, and the HR and the Christian Coalition tried to have a counter protest, and they were outnumbered 8-1. And the small group that they had was a group of older white people. I didn't see a single African American in their midst. And they just used the same vitriol that we've heard for a while. And I was very actively part of the protests that were there. And I thought it was very interesting that this was during Holy Week, and you actually had Catholic priests that came to support those in the LGBT community who came to stand in solidarity, that we had union leaders, and that we had got Teamsters that came and stood behind us to protect us, that we had veterans, that we had bikers that showed up. I mean, this was Arkansas saying enough is enough. And so I think Walmart had something to say about it. I won't take that away from them. But Axiom and some of the other groups had something to say about it. But I think the large part about it was the people and the work that Kendra Johnson and James Rector and HRC did to really make sure that just everyday Arkansans turned out to say, enough is enough, we are Arkansas, and this is enough.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing all that with me. That was extremely interesting and informative. I'm going to throw it back to David now, who will ask a couple of more questions and close this segment out. David?
Well, Tim, you're right on the second part.
Drew, we had sent you a whole list of questions, and you've covered all of them, did a great job. Probably kept you longer than we had intended to, but we're glad you were here for us. Want to thank you again for being on the Kudzu Vine, and we'll come back to you as Arkansas politics heats up at different times.
It does. I definitely want to throw something out there about Arkansas politics. Can't say much about the Arkansas Senate race, but we will have a U.S. Senate race on the ballot. John Bozeman's up for re-election. The dream candidate is definitely Mike Beebe, former governor. Polling shows he's got a 15-20 point lead over Bozeman, who's incumbent U.S. Senator, should he decide to run. Beebe's not made any effort at this point to show that he is going to run. I think maybe the unbelievable is true is that he did decide to retire after all these years in elective politics. James Lee Witt, former FEMA director who ran a stronger-than-expected race for Congress, his name has been bandied about. Former state senator Kevin Smith, a Helena West Helena's name, has been bandied about. Nate Steele, who ran for attorney general, state representative from Texarkana, his name's bandied about. And Paul Suskey, who is public service commissioner and a veteran, Iraq war veteran, who ran for AG back in 2006, his name's been bandied about. So, you know, still nothing there. The only other hot topic I can say is the second congressional district. If Curry gets in that race, that's going to actually, you know, you're going to have an African-American woman potentially be the nominee versus a freshman congressman, French Hill. And because of the fact that the business interests came in and they pulled a fast one in getting rid of the elected school board down here, and that has angered a lot of people. And with the fact that she may jump into this race and run for Congress, you may see the second congressional district. You know, one thing that was said about the nominee in 2014, he did get caught in the wave. Patrick Henry Hayes, popular former mayor of North Blue Rock, and I love Pat Hayes, but his campaign never really got out of Pulaski County. One thing that can be said about Curry is she does have ties around the district, but she campaigns probably harder than anybody else that we know. So she's kind of like Arkansas, what Michelle Nunn was starting in that Senate race. Let's just hope she's a little bit more successful.
Yep.
So, you know, that's at least another house seat towards the Democratic majority.
Oh, yeah, and it's over a year away, so we got plenty of time on all those races. But thanks again, Drew, for being on the Kudzu Vine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That was Drew Pritt from Arkansas, always our expert on the land of opportunity. Isn't that the Arkansas motto?
Yeah, I think
land
it
opportunity?
Is. Yeah.
I think it is, the Diamond State. Lady found a diamond in Arkansas not too long ago. I'm like,
a
several carats.
Yeah,
make you want to go and search for diamonds. Well, Tim, I had one more topic, and I guess it's going to be you, and you can kind of do a yes and no and that kind of thing. Martin O'Malley, kind of a, really in most circumstances would not be a fringe candidate because of Hillary Clinton's hold on the nomination at this point, kind of is a de facto fringe candidate. But the Baltimore riots, it's been speculated that they have hurt his chances, which were admittedly slim, at becoming the Democratic nominee. One, do you think that's true? And two, do you think that's fair?
No, I think it's neither. I don't think the former governor really had any chance. I don't think anybody really believes that. Who knows if he was going to get in the race? And why would this be pinned on him? You know, I mean, he's not in office or anything right now. The only chance he would have had in the presidential race would have been if she had gotten out. And I don't know if he'd have gotten the nomination then. I'd rather doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think his chances were very good. I think they said that, you know, he worked on focusing on fighting crime, and some of that may have led to some of the policies. It's kind of a long road back because you got to think he was mayor of Baltimore, then served as governor of Maryland two terms, and has been now been out of office. And so it's been a while since he served in the mayoral office. And then the current mayor, an African-American female, she got called out, I saw on the media,
for using the term thug like she was a racist, and she's an African-American female. So a lot of tricky dialogue going on, and I think this is a little part of that. But we didn't get time to explore it too deeply, and maybe that's just as well. But thanks again to Drew Pritt, and we got the British elections coming up, kind of out of our wheelhouse. We didn't get to that, Tim. I just got to find somewhere I can see the results to that, because I find it fascinating. It's so different from our system. I like watching it. So if you know where I can see the British elections on American TV without having 500 channels, let me know. But until next week, right. Been the Kudzu Bun.
Good night.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong...